Welcome to Work From Your Happy Place, the podcast that equips you with the tools, know-how, and motivation to live your dreams and find your happy place. Be sure to sign up for our free weekly newsletter for a recap of the week's guests and a preview of what's in store. To sign up, simply text the word happy place with no space to 33444. Now, it's my pleasure to introduce the host of Work From Your Happy Place, Belinda Ellsworth.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Work From Your Happy Place. I've got a great guest for you today, Mr. Miller Coach, Mark Miller, and he began his career journey, including 22 years at IBM, several thriving tech startups, a stint as a high school math teacher, a gig raising funds for the Jewish Community Center, and a near-fatal bicycle accident that changed his perspective forever. But after 30 years of wandering the proverbial career desert, often repeating the same mistakes over and over, Mark learned his most crucial lesson. Most people don't really know what makes them happy at their core and what fulfills them. They pursue money, status, a skill set, all of which provide some level of satisfaction, but not contentment. They wind up feeling frustrated and trapped. Others have figured out what they need, but don't know how to chart a course to get there. An active member of the Launchpad Job Club, Mark found himself counseling friends and associates on their career journeys and finally realized he had found his vocation and vision. He now uses his extensive training experience to help others, especially baby boomers, find careers that they could grow into for the decades that lie ahead. It's my pleasure to welcome Mark Miller.
Well, it's great to be here on your show, Belinda.
Well, thank you. So, Mark, just take a minute and like fill us in a little bit on this journey and how you got where you are today, as well as a little bit more about your business.
Sure. As you read in my bio, I've made 7 career changes in 35 years. Some people say I can't hold a job. And I wandered around, even at IBM, I wandered around a lot. And the bicycle accident that you alluded to was back in 2002. I came down a hill at about 25 miles an hour on my bicycle, not a motorbike, and turned into a blind turn and hit a Toyota Corolla head-on where he was going about 25 miles an hour. And I lived. I spent 5 days in the trauma center. Tore up a knee, I broke a hip, I dislocated a shoulder, broke a bunch of ribs, broke the clavicle, I had imprints of the pads of the helmet in my head.
Wow.
But I had no internal injuries and no brain injuries I'm willing to admit to. And they had me walking on crutches in 3 days. I was back on a bike in 10 weeks, flying back to China in 4 months. Oh, by the way, I flew right smack into the middle of the SARS epidemic, the bird flu epidemic in Guangdong province. That was my WTF moment. Why am I doing this? At those speeds, you have about a 10% survival rate. And so I left IBM in 2000, and I was working for a successful tech startup. We didn't get rich, but we got debt free. So I rode out the dot-com bust at a successful startup. And then I taught high school math and I did a gig at the Jewish Community Center, which I commonly joke, being a non-Jew, being the face of a Jewish organization is interesting. And then I went back, I relapsed. I went back into another startup in 2007. So I rode out the Great Recession at another successful startup. And what I noticed back then was I was watching all my friends being wiped out in the Great Recession. By the way, I'm 61. I'm right smack in the middle of the baby boomer generation. And I kept on looking around saying, okay, who is dealing with this? I've been on the board of a very large job club for 10 years now. And I basically found no one. So that's where the concepts behind Career Pivot came about, was saying, okay, I am a recovering engineer. Yes, there's a 12-step program for that. And I started doing a lot of reflective work. Okay, how have I managed to move from career to career to career? Mostly successfully. I've failed a few times, and I've recovered each time. And again, I built systems on top of it. And that's where I kind of got started. So I now have... I've built systems such that I can get my clients to reflect back on their 30 years of work history and look at saying, okay, When were you the happiest? When were you the most miserable? And why? That gives you great perspective on where to go forward. And what's happening now is most of us, we're not going to retire at 65.
Right.
Most of us want to keep working. I joke I was raised to be an employee, to go work for a father-like company, that after 30 or 40 years, I would ride off into the sunset and I would retire. Well, they moved my cheese. And the reality is I don't have any plans ever to retire. I want to work less on my terms at something I enjoy.
Absolutely.
Right? And so I walk people through that process and to discover what that is. And very often it's discovering who do I want to work with and the environment. Because by the way, very often that's more important than what you do. If I put you with the right people, the right boss, the right rewards, give you the right level activity, you could have a job you really don't like and you'll be okay. I can give you a job you love, put you with a crappy boss, a crappy team, don't reward you, and you'll be miserable.
That is so, so true.
And so it's a marriage of, and at the same time, what does society value? We are going through so much creative destruction right now. Job categories are being eliminated. New things are being created. And you have to kind of look and say, okay, where do I go? What does the future look like? I just did a blog post on living in a career disaster area at the age of 65. And I have two clients who are right now who are 65 years old, and what they used to do largely has disappeared in the last 5 years.
Right.
Poof. Poof. And you have to be aware of that and then say, okay, how do I pivot to something better and with looking towards the future? And so I've kind of built this whole model around reflection and looking at where you've been. And by the way, what have you done to yourself? Because by the way, most of us, when we go to work, we're actors. We play roles. And at some point in time, we actually start believing those roles. And then you start going, and by the way, we play those roles because we get paid for them.
Right.
And then we forget who we are. And I've got lots of examples of that, but I use the example. I'm a closet introvert. I am a big time introvert. You would never know it by talking to me. I'm a phenomenally good public speaker. I was a face for IBM for 10 years. By the way, when I walk off stage, my knees buckle. I'm exhausted. I do not get energy from that.
Wow.
But I'm good. I'm really good. But sorry, I can't do that full time. I'm 61 now. I'm in really good shape. I don't want to do that full time.
Right.
Right. And understanding that. Does that give you a good idea of what I do?
Absolutely, it does. And I think that it's it very much needed because when you look at things that you said, like careers that have just literally disappeared, people need to make that shift. And I would also agree with you that, I think that we live for this sort of retirement and then people get in this space and they're like, okay, what am I going to do with my time now? And I think at the end of the day, at least what I see in people is that people really do desire to be productive and they're happier when they're productive. I just did an interview with a woman who just turned 100 and still working and still coaching people every day. And she said, I just have too many people to reach and to love on to be sitting here doing nothing. And she said, and what else would I be doing? And at that same token, that's what's made her live and enjoy her life every single day. Like she's so amazing that it's mind blowing for me. And I think that people get a perspective of, well, this is what my life is going to look like. But in reality, things change and you got to be willing to make that change. And I'm sure that there is a tremendous amount of people in fact, I've talked to them myself, that are in that space that are like, but I don't know what to do. I don't know where to go from here. What am I supposed to do in a world that is shrinking in my job opportunities? So I think you're providing a really great resource for these individuals. So that's great. Thanks for doing that.
Well, thank you for having me.
All right. So then tell us a little bit then about the business. You've done that a little bit, but how's that shaped your lifestyle today?
Well, you know, as I joke, I was raised to be an employee. Both my parents were Depression era. My mom was born 1918. My dad was born 1920. So, you know, I was supposed to take that nice, safe career. And so I worked the 9-to-5 job until I had my bike accident. And then I bounced around since. But at this point in time, I want control over when I work, how I work. I joke, I've never been good with bosses, and now I have the worst boss ever, me. But it allows me to, like this morning, I got up, I walked to my local coffee shop, got my 3.5 miles walk in, I came back in, I edited a podcast before I got on with you. I've got 2 or 3 phone calls this afternoon. I'm going to write a blog post on creative destruction this afternoon. And by the way, it's my time. I can work as hard as I want. I can work as little as I want. And for most of us, what most of us are looking for is freedom. Freedom and flexibility to work as much as we want. Because I'll put it bluntly, my last tech startup left me stressed out. I was working 80-hour weeks. And you know what? I don't want to do that no more.
Right.
And so that's, to me, that's the benefit of what I'm doing. And two, one of my core needs is to help people. And so number one, I get to do that in my business. But two, I commonly joke, I get to pick my clients.
Right.
Right. I have a number of clients who are in their 50s and they're looking at leaving the corporate world to go do freelance. And I said, okay, if you could make 3/4 of what you're making today, only work 10 months of the year. And by the way, fire clients you don't like. And it's the third one that usually gets them excited. Because it's usually that 10% of people who really just annoy you.
Right.
Right. And you can choose who you want to work with. And that's really key, because that's a key to happiness. And you know, I put people through a process, and I can, you know, I just did a blog post on how job hunting is like dating in marriage. You got to date.
Right.
Right. Not every interview or every job is right for you. So you go in and date and you figure out, is this right for me and is this right for you? And so I've kind of taken that approach to the business. Is if people come to me, I evaluate them. If I can help them, that's great. If not, like, I don't work with 25-year-olds. I've got a bunch of people I refer to elsewhere. 25-year-olds don't have enough life experience to work through my process. So fine, I know people I can refer them off to. And in fact, on my podcast a couple of weeks ago, I had Kay McManus on, and we both joked the fact that when we got, both of us got started, and Kay's an organizer, and he joked with the ideal client initially was someone who had a heartbeat. That's what qualified them.
Right. I totally get that. Yeah. You're like, okay, here's a paying client and I'm going to take it because I don't have a paying client. And you are.
That's right.
Just constantly, and you do work for the money, not for the pleasure of it. And then at some point in that journey, you say, you know what, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm going to do work with the people I really want to work with. And I do think you're absolutely right. That comes with wisdom. It comes with confidence. It comes with sometimes a wake-up call like you had with your bicycle accident. And I think that at some point, everybody kind of, especially if you have your own business, you do get to a point where you say, okay, I finally have achieved some of these things I've been setting out. Why am I still settling for things that don't make me happy?
Yeah, let me throw in a couple. My business coach, when I first got launched, two things she kind of drummed into me was, number one, understand who you want to work with and who you don't. By the way, I've done blog posts on, you know, making yourself an opportunity magnet. In other words, magnets both attract and they repel. So you want to repel those opportunities that are not right for you. The other thing that she kind of hammered into me is, what skills do you want to carry forward? And more importantly, what skills do you want to leave behind? In other words, just because you can do something and you may be very good at it, doesn't mean you should continue to do it. Because there was a great Larry Bird quote on a winner is someone who understands their God-given talents, works like heck to build skills on top of that, and then that, you know, makes them into a winner. And most of us have to go back and understand, what are our talents? Our skills are things we learn. So Larry Bird was not a great athlete. He's slow. He couldn't jump. Mike thought is he had his talents were great eyesight and great hand dexterity, which he made himself into a great shooter and passer. And sometimes we have skills that are not tied to our innate talents. My public speaking is exactly that. That is not natural for me. I've become very good at it, but that doesn't mean I should do it.
Those are really, really great points. Absolutely. So then talking about skill sets, because I think that is one of the things that people do identify with, what are some of your greatest skill sets that you think have helped you in owning your own business?
Well, it's interesting. One of the things I do with clients is take them back to childhood to understand what their innate talents are. And so what did you do as a child that you couldn't get enough of? For me, it was jigsaw puzzles. I'm a pattern matcher. And so one of the things I do, how that plays out into my current job and my current business is I use the Berkman assessment, which is a very, very complicated. It's probably the closest thing to measuring emotional intelligence out there. But I can read patterns. I can look at a report and go, oh, you're a closet creative. You're this, you're that. And I can look at it and then we can sit down and talk and we can dig into it. And I've dealt with a lot of college counselors who say, I don't like it. It's too complicated. I said, well, that's what I like about it. You know, a kind of joke is I see dead people. You know, I can read through that. Similarly, when I do branding, I listen to people's stories. And I will pick things out of their stories, patterns that they don't see. And then we can work at putting labels on it. In fact, the Berkman will give me all your odd combinations of behaviors. And by the way, I'll brand you around that. Because that's what makes you different. I had one gentleman who was a cause-driven, people-oriented geek. By the way, that's an oxymoron.
Mm-hmm.
And the key piece was he couldn't work for just anybody. He had to work where the corporate mission was absolutely imperative. It didn't have to be his job. Oh, by the way, he landed at Whole Foods. It was a sustainable food chain. And he was a business analyst for them. So it's interesting. My ability to pick out patterns and hear and then translate is probably my greatest skill. And it's all tied back to my jigsaw puzzles.
That is so interesting as I'm sitting here listening to you. Because I think that's one of the things that makes me a good consultant. Like, so I do my speaking, but then I do consulting. And I'm able to go in and see almost immediately just by looking at different structures that they have in place and systems and say, okay, here's where this is broken. These don't fit together. I like to say, like, you have all the quilt pieces, but all the patches, but when you try to sew them together, they don't look like a really nice quilt. And so I'm able to see those really quickly, like really quickly, and then help clients. And I never, ever tied that ever to how much I enjoyed as a kid doing jigsaw puzzles. And that will be what I will even do now to relax me. Like, I usually sometimes have one going because it's for me, it's extremely relaxing. And other people say, oh my gosh, it's so stressful. And it's funny how that is, but I never, ever equated the liking jigsaw puzzles to analyzing people's business and being able to see how all those different pieces fit together. And so thank you for that.
Well, the way it manifests now is I'm a Sudoku freak.
So am I. Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah. I get them off crazydad.com, and crazy is spelled with a K. He's got gazillion puzzles out there, and he's got great Sudokus that you can print off.
Oh my gosh.
There's a resource for you.
Okay. Well, that's awesome. So gosh, I'm learning some fun new things. And that's funny that we shared that in common. So that's interesting. So talk to us a little bit now about, like, we're going to talk about one of your greatest accomplishments and then one of your greatest challenges. And normally I separate those out, but yours, in fact, are one and the same. So I thought I would just go ahead and lay that out, one of your greatest challenges and one of your greatest accomplishments. And you want to know what? I think it's interesting. Most people don't end up putting that. But in reality, sometimes our greatest success stories come out of one of our absolute greatest challenges. I think that's more common than people realize or want to identify. So do you want to share a little bit about that with us?
Well, let me tell you the story of Mike Martin. Mike came to me about 4 years ago out of industrial. He had been an industrial sales guy. He sold parts, all kinds of industrial parts throughout his career. And by the way, in many industries, B2B or business to business sales is going away. Traditional account managers, that job is disappearing because of the internet. You know, I can get online and learn all I need to know about the parts. And so, and Mike is a big time musician and he got into sales. Why'd he get into sales? Because when he was 25, someone told him, you should be a sales guy. You're a nice guy. And when we went through assessment, he didn't look anything like a sales guy. And so we went back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And we probably worked 3 or 4 months. And he thought he wanted to be a school teacher. By the way, he's 60 or 61 now. And this is when he was about in his mid to late 50s. And we didn't know where it was. And then finally, one day he said to me, you know what? As a kid, if it had wings, wheels, or keels, it was cool. And from that point forward, we started looking at anything that moved. Now, it's rather interesting. He had an undergraduate associate's degree in aviation. And when he was going for his teaching, he had never gotten his bachelor's degree. So he went back and the easiest thing for him to get a bachelor's degree was in aviation. And he'd been a pilot for many years. So he kept on searching and trying to figure out. And then, by the way, he found that the Houston Metro was opening up a new line in Houston. And I live in Austin, Texas. So I said, yeah, I'll go apply for it. And they called him, he completely out of the blue, they called him up and said, why don't you come on down for an interview? And he went, what? You're going to interview me?
Yeah.
And so he went down to interview, very convoluted panel interview. And as it turned out, they said, hey, let's walk out onto the trains. And they walked him out on the rail line and he's walking on across the rail yard and the big, huge gravel. Cause they wanted to see whether he could maneuver it, get him up in the train. And by the way, at that point, when he's walking across the rail yard, he's going, I'm going to get to drive a train. I'm going to get to drive a train.
Right.
Right. He ends up being a trainer and a tester on the Red Line. He ended up training all their experienced drivers. He did it for 2 years. He actually moved a trailer down to Houston, which he lived in. He commuted back and forth. And that was kind of the first step. He decided after 2 years he couldn't stand his boss and it was getting a little tedious. But he learned that, wow, you know what? I like the training aspect. So he came back to Austin and kept on looking around and looking around. And by the way, what he is now, remember I said he has a degree in aviation. He'd been a pilot all these years. He is now a drone pilot instructor.
Wow.
He works for Dart Drones, and you may have heard of Dart Drones because they were on Shark Tank.
Right.
And Mark Cuban owns part of the business. And so he spends his weekends training pilots to be drone pilots, and he spends time during his week working part-time for a company that does video shoots and doing, you know, for realtors and for industrial inspections. And it's one of those things where we started out, we had no idea where he was going to go. And it took multiple pivots as we went along. By the way, Mike is happier than a clam right now. And who would have thought, well, 5 years ago, there was no such thing as drone, commercial drone pilots in the U.S. They didn't exist. So it was one of these kind of both serendipitous, but very, very, methodical staying with it. One of the things I interview people who have made career pivots, late in life career pivots, and Mike was one of them. And the common theme is there was something in his life that's in each person's life that says, you know what, you need to go do something different. And by the way, we usually don't do anything.
Right.
Then there's a second kick in the ass that says, go do it. And third, it never turns out exactly the way you expect. And you've got to be flexible enough to be able to say, okay, this is not exactly what I expected, but I'm going to go with it. And usually it turns out better than you expected, but it's different. And that has to be okay.
That's right. Great. So then, share with us just a little bit about what working from your happy place means to you.
My happy place is getting to help people. One of my key rewards is when people say thank you. It's one of the things as I've looked back on my career, whenever I have not had client involvement is when I've been the most miserable.
Right.
By the way, my first job at IBM was developing word processors. This is prior to the IBM PC in 1978. And I wrote software, and I never saw anyone use it. It took me the longest time. I hated that. Didn't know why. So one of the things, and this is one of the things that Kay McManus on my podcast talked about, she really looks for clients who's a good match for her, because then she's looking for clients that she can really help. And that's similar with me. When I kind of vet clients, is this somebody that I can actually help? Because if I can help them, then I get my needs met. And my needs is to feel useful and people to say thank you.
That is so true. You know, when we do surveys or interview people, when they really get down to what they value in a job, the greatest response that we get isn't income or it is being appreciated for a job well done. That's the number one answer again and again and again. So I think that, you know, people just want that appreciation and recognition, I guess, is a little bit of it, of, you know, knowing that what you're doing matters. And it certainly does line up with everything that you're talking about today.
Well, one of the things I work through with clients is, when have you felt the most valued? And it breaks down into six things. Number one, the mission. By the way, I find the military and nonprofit folks, if the mission is right, they don't care about anything else. Then comes the public recognition. Third is the bonus check, the financial reward. The last three don't cost anything, which is the pat in the back from the boss, the team, or your client. Most of us want two, maybe three of those. And by the way, once you identify them, you may have to actually go ask for it.
Right.
Because many bosses think everybody wants to be rewarded like them. And by the way, nobody likes to be rewarded like you.
Right.
We're all so different.
Exactly.
But you have to understand, here's the way I like to phrase it with clients is, if you want to get the most out of Mark, here's what you got to do. And if they understand that, and by the way, I do assessments on all my the people who support me, because yes, I know how to tweak them. I know how to get the most out of them by treating them the way they want to be treated.
That is great.
Like I've had a couple of support people, my co-author, my former webmaster, unfortunately, Melinda passed away this last year. Mm. Both of them did not take criticism well. So I would, anytime something went wrong, I was really careful. I would praise them for what they had done and was really soft on the criticism. And number one, I got a lot of loyalty out of both of them. And two, they did really good work for me. I got what I wanted. And I treated them the way that they wanted to be treated.
That is, that's advice I think all of us can adhere to. I'm sitting there even thinking about clients of my own and knowing exactly how they kind of react to different pieces of information. So that's definitely really great advice. So tell us then what advice you would give to others who want to be entrepreneurs, because it's pretty exhilarating, but at the same time, it can be challenging.
Well, the first thing you have to understand, what are you good at and what are you not good at? What do you like to do and what don't you like to do? And the things you don't like to do and are not good at, get somebody else to go do them. That's one of my biggest challenges. I am incredibly horizontally skilled. I know how to do lots and lots of stuff. I am very technical. You want me to program in JavaScript? I can do that. I shouldn't be doing that.
Right.
I'm looking at launching a membership site. I'm hiring people to do that. Can I do that myself? The answer is yes. I got other things to go do. And that's one of the challenges. Just because you can do something doesn't mean you should be doing something. That is really key. The fact that you can doesn't mean you should. And that was somewhat of a long trip for me to get me to stop doing certain things like my books and you know, finding an editor and doing other things. The other piece is when I left the corporate world to start this business, I knew exactly how much money I had. I knew my cash drain. I'm an engineer. I can figure that out. That still didn't stop me from waking up at 3 a.m. going, I don't have a paycheck anymore. I totally discounted the emotional side. And that is, for those of us who are incredibly analytical, is a real danger.
Right.
Right?
Yes. Absolutely.
Right? It's balancing the emotional side with the analyticals. Excuse me. You're taking notes right now.
Oh, no. I thought that you were getting ready. You cleared your throat, no. And I thought you were going to continue. So I thought, must be taking a drink of water. We'll edit that.
Okay.
So I'm like, okay, what happened to him? All right. No, let's. So that was great. We'll just end on that. And then I'm going to say, great. So in closing today, Mark, what are some exciting new things that you're working on? And then tell our audience how they can find you.
Sure. I just launched my latest book, Repurpose Your Career, A Practical Guide for the Second Half of Life, which is on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and all your other fine online retailers. And I am currently working on building an online community. My plan is to launch this around Labor Day. I've got my first 12 members to come in and tell me what they want. And this is for those of us in the second half of life who want to continue to work and want a community around them to support them. One of the things I learned when I joined my Launchpad Job Club back in 2006 is when we run into problems and difficulties, we think we're the only ones who have those problems.
Yep.
And the reality is when I get people to walk into Launchpad and they say, wow, there are lots of other people just like me. And what happens is there is support in numbers.
Right.
And when I've been doing my initial interviews of my first prospective members, and the things they want is, number one, a community. Two, they want accountability. Three, they want to have their horizons broadened. In other words, I was talking to one woman, 65, out of Billings, Montana. She does marketing work for a bunch of folks in California. She says, oh, well, I want to write fiction. I said, do you know about Mark Dawson's self-publishing formula? And she goes, what? I said, sure. There are all kinds of people writing fiction. Now, by the way, you got to write good fiction. But there are people who are, for very low cost, will help you get that published. You can do that? And the answer was yes. In fact, I've got a podcast episode where I talk about how I wrote 3 books without ever writing a book.
That's great.
Right?
I think everybody's got a book in them, right?
I'm not a writer. I have a co-author who helps me.
Right.
And, you know, it's interesting. Susan Leahy, who's my co-author on 2 of my 3 books, I put her name on the front cover. And a lot of ghostwriters, a lot of authors won't let their ghostwriters put their names on the front cover. And I said, sure I do. Why? Susan's gotten business out of that. And by the way, you know what that costs me?
Nothing.
Yep,
nothing.
And it's treating people right. And those things don't cost me anything. My book cover designer, who has done all 3 of my book covers, I don't know why I didn't do it before, but on this 3rd book, I put her name as the book cover designer on Amazon. Again, that doesn't cost me nothing. But it gets her business. And by the way, she does a really good job on my book covers.
That's awesome.
So I am looking at launching this community, because I've been looking around, looking for other communities like this, and no one has successfully done it. I've watched AARP launch Life Reimagined 3 times and fail 3 times because they don't understand. It's not the education, it's the community that people want. So that's my next big step.
Oh, that is fantastic. I think people are...
If anyone's interested in being part of that community, I'm going to be rolling these folks in stages. And by the way, my early participants are going to tell me what it should look like.
Good. So where can people find you then? How can people connect with you?
Go to careerpivot.com. Click on the contact me link at the top of the page, or there's an email list on the bottom, or there's a speaker pipe on the right side. There are lots of ways. Just go to careerpivot.com and you'll be able to get a hold of me. By the way, if you want to connect with me on LinkedIn, I've got 15,000 followers on LinkedIn. Just go ahead and send me a connection request and say you heard me on Belinda's podcast. Or, yes, I'm on Twitter. It's at Career Pivot. And my Facebook page is lonely.
Okay.
Friend my Facebook page.
Yeah, we need to go there right?
Right, which is Career Pivot.
Okay, perfect. Well, Mark, thank you so much for your time today and your insights and wisdom. And I know that you're providing a really, really great service for a tremendous amount of people. And so thank you so much for that. And thank you for being our guest today.
Well, thank you for having me on your show.
Thanks for joining us at Work From Your Happy Place.
If you like what you hear, please share it with your friends. And be sure to rate and review us on iTunes or Stitcher. For a free gift on finding your own happy place, please visit workfromyourhappyplace.com and click on the free audio button. Thanks again for listening.